I'm Zach Ziegler, and you're listening to Oregon Rainmakers from KLCC. On this edition, I head to Soft Star Shoes in Philomath. A big question for many small business owners is, what am I going to do when I'm ready to retire? It takes a lot of trust to hand off something that years or even decades have been poured into. When that decision came for the previous owner of Soft Star Shoes, she simply looked around the office and factory floor. Earlier this year, Soft Star became employee-owned, with every employee getting a say in big decisions now. That style of corporate structure is about as unique in the U.S. as the minimalist shoe that the company makes. To learn more about how things are going, I headed to Philomath, where I talked with Sarah Mason, the company's chief people officer and a current member of the committee that now makes executive decisions. She starts by taking me on a tour to learn about those shoes and leads with an interesting quirk about the company.
All of us here are known as elves because we make shoes or we sell shoes or we hire people to do those things. And if you're familiar with the fairy tale, The Elves and the Shoemaker, the shoemaker had way too many shoes to make. He goes to bed, the elves come out and make the shoes. And in the morning he wakes up and the shoes are all made. So we sign our emails, Elf Sarah, Elf Kenna.
I guess with that, I mean, you're kind of limited to shoes, toys, or cookies.
Right, right.
A quick disclosure. Yes, I realize I stole that joke from the movie Elf.
We have a few accessories, but we've been in business a little over 40 years. And Softstar started by one man, Tim Oliver, who just recently retired. He started making soft shoes when he couldn't find them for his young daughter, and they were all really stiff, and he wanted something that was healthier and more comfortable. And so he started making shoes out of a school bus. Our shoes were sold by Tim and his wife at the time in kind of art festivals and craft fairs in California. They were in Texas after that. That's when they lived in the school bus, converted it, and then eventually came to Oregon because they thought it'd be a great place to raise a family. They were in downtown Corvallis for quite a while. So in 2005, two friends, Tricia Salcido and Larkin Holovari, talked to Tim about buying the business. They had young kids, they were both engineers, and they wanted something where they could be with their kids, have their kids at work, have a little more flexibility. And long story short, Tim agreed to sell the business to them and stay on as our founder. And in 2017, we outgrew our Corvallis workshop and moved to this building in Philomath. This building was originally a roller skating rink built in the 50s. It was a mess. It was, most people would have knocked it down. The owner of this building is Alan Ayers, and he's amazing, and he had a vision. So he came in and over 2 to 3 years really repaired the building. At the time, Trish and Larkin knew we needed a bigger space, but they really wanted something that was fun to work in, that was healthy, that wasn't full of paint and chemicals, and this really fit with that.
Yeah, well, how about we walk around a little? Yeah.
95% of our shoes are sold online, so although we do have this local space and we love it, it's really a small amount of our sales. Another one of our core values is connecting with the community and having fun at work. So we love having people come into the shop. We have a huge slide in the workshop.
I was wondering if that was functional or just fun.
Most people, their first guess is that it's functional. I suppose it could be, but it's fun. Because one of our core values is communicating, having fun at work, and connecting with the community, we have this slide. And it really embodies a lot of that. So when our orders come in, we have our customer service team and they print every single order and they look at every single order because we'll get comments on there like, hey, what do you think of this color combination? Or I think I ordered a size 9 last time. Can you double check for me and make sure? You'll see along here we have a lot of shoes. We call it on the wall. And these are shoes, our collection shoes that we make in advance. And we can do those during some of our slower times so that if you are to put in an order for one of those that ships out that day or maybe the next day, and we can charge less for that. That's about half our shoes. The other half are what we like to call custom shoes, where the style and the patterns are set, but you might pick a shiny purple front and a black back, and we will make that for you. And so that will take, our goal is to have that made and sent out to you within 4 to 5 business days. You know, people are used to ordering off Amazon and getting something the next day. That's not going to happen for us, but if we can get it to you within a week, that makes us really happy, and that makes the customer happy.
That is a pretty impressive turnaround time for something that's a custom order these days, you know.
So we've got our orders here, we've got them sorted, and now we need to cut our leather. We have two ways of cutting our leather. For, you know, 35 years, we would use what's called, we call it a clicker. It's like a hydraulic press. So let's walk back there.
Yeah.
So this is Mark. This is Zach. He's doing a radio interview.
How's it going?
Doing great.
Good.
Mark is, you might want to talk with him later. He is on our TSC, our Trust Stewardship Committee. Let's get out of the way for safety. We can come on here.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I like this machine. Essentially, as you can see, we got these giant cookie cutters here. And they're basically just shapes for all our different shoes. I go over here and I grab whatever color that the customer has ordered on there for their shoe. Lay it out, find a good piece of leather here, take the shape that I need, pull it over, double thumb, it's stamped down on it. Now I've got the shape I need. But as you can see, we've got hundreds of parts to work with, and it's a little confusing at first, but now I know where everything is without looking.
Nice. Yeah, it's just like, you know, making holiday cookies back at grandma's house when you were a kid, except on a much bigger level.
He has these scissors. We really try to minimize hand cutting, but it is necessary. It's really hard on the hands, especially with leather. And so that's why we have dies, or I'm going to show you a different huge tool we have to help with that as well.
So. Cool.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. Thanks for explaining how it works.
You're welcome.
Over here is a, call it the Zoom. This is a huge investment for SoftStar. And this is a digital cutter that we can use. We can now make patterns and project them onto the materials, and it helps us cut multiple pieces very quickly. You know, it used to be that when we were experimenting with a new pattern or something, we would literally make patterns out of cardboard and hand cut them all. And then once we knew exactly what we needed, we'd send them off to a place in Texas to make these dies, these metal dies. And it's great, it works great. But if you want to change to it, you have to make a new pattern, make a new die. We have one elf who's our designer, right? She gets input from a lot of people, but she'll use some programs that we can just adjust on the computer, project them, and then our pattern's changed. So this is one shoe.
I'm seeing some soles, a spot that is obviously straps. It's got holes for a buckle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've got the heel here. We've got the piece that's gonna go over the toe. We have some straps. These are kind of the inside of the shoe, the midsole. And then at the very end, a rubber sole will get added. All the parts and pieces have been cut and are in the toe. And then we start the sewing and gluing process. So this is one of our lines. And the first step would be to we call it white glue. So when you're sewing clothes at home, you can pin fabric together. You cannot pin leather together. One, it's too thick, and two, it would leave holes. So we use white glue, just like you would at school, to temporarily hold the parts and pieces together until we sew them. You can see we've got a lot of size tags here, right? We have smaller pieces that we cut in advance that there's multiples of that we would glue in. Next step is we start sewing. So you can see this tote, this is a lot of pieces. There's probably, 20 pieces in here for one pair of shoes. This is a boot. It's our switchback boot, which is a hiking boot, excuse me. These machines are industrial machines. They are very powerful. So if you think about like your home machine is a Toyota, this is like a Ferrari. It has to be able to sew through multiple layers of leather and rubber. Hi, Amar.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Good. This is Zach. He's recording us for radio. Amar is, you can go ahead and sew.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's doing the first step of the sewing process. So he's sewing the pieces of leather together. Amar and Mustafa came to us. We met them through an amazing agency called Salem for Refugees, or Corvallis for Refugees, and they help refugees come to the United States and get jobs. Neither of these guys speak English as their first language, although they're learning it day by day. They have amazing sewing experience and skills, and they have been some of our most dedicated, loyal employees. They've learned so quickly, even without being able to speak English as their first language. You can see this is where Amar has finished the first step of the sewing. So you can see it's coming together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You really, like, that's when you look at it and go, right. Oh, yeah, that's a shoe.
That's going to be a shoe. Yeah. So you can see we've got kind of the upper of it. It's turning into a boot, but it doesn't have the sole on it yet. But we're getting there. So the next step will be sewing the midsole onto the shoe. And so another person will do that. Let's go around, if we can sneak through here.
Yeah.
So this area is called our bond area, and not all shoes go into this area, but the ones that have a sole that's adhered on will come here. Hopefully you noticed when you, or hopefully you didn't notice any kind of stinky smells when you came in here.
Yeah, no, it smelled kind of nice. Smelled like wooden leather. Two pleasant scents.
There are a lot of glues out there that we could use that really stink and aren't great for you. We don't use those. We do use some adhesives for our very durable soles, and we put them on over here in the corner in these hoods. The last thing to do on these shoes is to trim any last minute threads, to lace them up, to triple check anything. So for example, we would trim that thread there. That's what we do at what we call our finishing station. Once the shoe is finished, it's ready to go to the customer. We ship all over the world every day. And then the other 5% are local, and so we'll call you and say, hey, come pick it up, or we can send it to you as well.
We're going to take a break before we talk about Softstar's move to employee-owned. I'm Zach Ziegler, and you're listening to Oregon Rainmakers from KLCC.
I'm Barbara Dellenbach, host of KLCC's Oregon Grapevine. Base Building for Power is training everyone to step up for issues that matter. Executive Director Harley Augustino says a key is confidence.
When you're asking somebody to do something, you're giving them an opportunity to improve their lives. And if you really believe that, then it's not about you.
Building Relationships in Action on the latest Oregon Grapevine at KLCC.org.
We're back. I'm Zach Ziegler, and you're listening to Oregon Rainmakers. My conversation with Softstar Shoes' Sarah Mason continues.
How did this process start, first of all? How did it get to be, you know what, instead of finding a new owner, we've got plenty of them in the building if everyone just gets a little bit.
Right. So the former owner, Tricia Salcido, who is our chief financial officer and still works at Softstar Shoes, for a few years had been thinking about, okay, what's my exit strategy going to be? You know, she'd been here for about 20 years, and both her father and grandfather have been small business owners, so she'd seen it kind of from her family perspective and seen the transition too when her father in particular retired, and how that transition went and what worked and what didn't. And what I know he really struggled with was seeing the business change a lot and seeing the values that he had built maybe not stay with the new owners, or seeing the employees not as happy as when he was there. And so Trish wanted to avoid that. So she had looked into several different options. We have about 30 employees, so we're a small business, but we're not teeny tiny small. And so she had to find the right fit. And so at some point she had heard about something called an employee-owned trust, which is pretty new to Oregon. There's a lot of them in Europe, but it's similar to a co-op, but there's some differences. And the first difference is that every employee is an owner. We don't have to buy into it. That structure, I think, matches well with the existing culture of Softstar. So Tricia and Tim before her had always valued employees, and we wanted to be a place that it's people like coming to work. We work hard, but we might as well have fun while we do it, hence the slide, right? We want a culture that is a place that's fun to come to. There's nothing worse than Sunday night dreading coming to work.
My brother used to work at, for a company that was a co-op, and you know, he was, after a certain amount of time, he was given a certain percentage of the company. Yep. It increased over time. Yep. When he left that company, they basically had to buy out that portion that he owned. So it sounds like that kind of differs here, where it's more so you kind of all collectively own, if I could better term, the stock, and everyone kind of splits things evenly, it sounds?
Yeah, so everybody is an owner, and we all share in it. When we have our payouts, our employee payouts, it's based on how long you've worked here and how many hours you work. And when you leave, you leave, right? You do not own the business anymore. You don't own part of the business. You also don't have to be bought out. So it's slightly different than some of the bigger co-ops around, but it allows for a lot of flexibility too, which can be nice.
How has it changed the culture around here? You know, you said it just started in January. How's it been the last couple of months?
Well, I think the biggest thing is relief that we're not getting bought out by a big company overseas, and that things, at least for now, are going to stay kind of the same day to day. And that's a good thing for us. Our culture has been in line with listening to employees, working together. But there is a sense of, like, this decision I'm making, this suggestion I'm giving to improve things, it's going to make a better shoe, it's going to make customers happy, and it could help with the employees and their payout.
Yeah, and chances are that you're not going to run into, you know, another well-known instance of a business being sold in the Pacific Northwest, the Seattle Supersonics, who, through that whole process, oh yeah, they're staying, right, don't worry, right, we're not moving the team. Well, they moved the team.
Right. Yeah, so we have, the employees have more control over the decisions that are made. You know, in a business where there's one owner, ultimately it comes down to, they might be a great listener, they might listen to input, but they get to make the final decision. That's a little bit different now. And, you know, is that going to involve more conversations? Yeah. And is that a good thing? Yeah. People make suggestions here, and we encourage people to make suggestions and spread their knowledge. And we hope they continue to do that. We think we have the right structure for that.
So when it does come time for, say, a big decision or a little decision, is it the board? Is it going to the body as a whole? Do we have a, you know, an employee referendum, to borrow a term from the elections world, or is this representative democracy?
So my biggest fear when Trish first talked to me about it is I was picturing all 30 of us sitting around a room, spending hours and hours trying to decide if we should have pink or purple shoelaces in the shoe. And I said, we can't do that. We will never be able to make a shoe. We all have strong opinions. She said, no. It doesn't quite work like that. So we still have an executive management team, right, who makes day-to-day decisions. But the Trust Stewardship Committee, their job is to make sure that those decisions, and decisions coming from anywhere else, are in line with the goals of the trust and the values of the trust. Like I said, we're just starting to set up that structure and some of those decision-making matrices. What's the plural of matrix?
Matrices,
thank you.
I said it with a question mark at the end. Just know that, you know, any English majors tuning in.
Right. I defer to them. So we hired a group called Project Equity. They're consultants that help people and businesses transition from a traditional business structure to employee ownership. And so we've worked with them for almost 2 years, and we'll continue to work with them for up to 3 years. And they help guide us through setting up some of those structures that you've mentioned. So again, we're just starting with them this month, and they're going to help us figure out, okay, when somebody has a suggestion for, hey, we want to switch to 4 10-hour days, you know, instead of 5 8-hour days. That's a big change. Who makes that decision? How do we make that decision? Who gets their input?
After chatting with Sarah, she leaves me in the hands of Mark Martin. He's the elf who showed us how the hydraulic press that cuts the leather works. He's also a member of the Trust Stewardship Committee.
It's been kind of crazy for me. I owned my own business and I sold it about 6 years ago. And I stumbled into this line of work and I fell in love with it day one. I love it. I knew the founder of the company, Tim. And then when Trish bought it 20 years ago, she obviously expanded the business, went into adult shoes and moved us to this beautiful building out here in Philomath.
This cool old roller rink.
It's incredible. It's a fun place to come to work every day. It's with all the beautiful exposed woods. And like I said, I got lucky just to stumble into this. I knew a few people who worked here. And now I've been here for 5 years. It was quite the surprise when Trish began stepping down process or thinking about maybe moving on and selling. And she sprung on us that, hey, I'm going to sell it to you guys. It was a big wow moment, you know, and we were all pretty excited, but also like none of us knew how it worked, you know, and we're still learning.
It's probably a bit relieving because there's always that fear when the owner changes. Oh boy, what changes are coming? Are they going to shut this down and move it all overseas, or are they moving it to some other town? It's probably a bit of a relief to know that you work with the owners.
Yes, absolutely.
You are one of the owners. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And just keeping it local. It's important to everyone here. We take pride in being locally owned and being a part of our community. It would have been a much scarier prospect had she just sold it to someone else. And of course, then you don't know what your future entails at all, but it's pretty exciting. We're all really ecstatic and happy that she chose to go the way she did.
It's been a little over 2 months for you now as a member of the committee. Any big decisions that have had to come up yet? Have you guys really gotten to test the system thoroughly yet? Or has it been, okay, we're just kind of getting, sticking our toes in the water?
Exactly, the latter. We have had just a few meetings. But no, we haven't made any big decisions. It's business as usual. On the surface, nothing has changed really at all. But the first committee that I'm on now, we have the job of laying the foundation for the future committees on how to conduct business and how to make those decisions. Is the subject we're talking about big enough to get employee input or not? We're all just dipping our toes in, none of us have done this before, so it's exciting.
Awesome. Well, I'll let you get back to your fun here. You got bigger fish to fry than chatting with me.
I'm ahead of the game. Part of the thing I love about working here is that we all learn to do different things in the shop, whether it's sewing or soling or right now I'm helping with materials support, unboxing things, putting them out in the shop, and I always have time for anybody who is interested in learning about what we do here. It's fun.
After talking with Mark, Sarah met back up with me for the moment I've been waiting for.
Time to slide.
that sounds like fun.
I'm going to go downstairs and make sure everything's cleared out. But in the meantime, the slide rules. You have to go on your bottom, feet forward, not on your stomach, not lying down, don't swing from the top, no flips.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to be a risky one on this. I'll follow all the things I always told my daughter at the playground.
Yeah. Okay, go for it.
If you're curious, you can see a picture of the slide and other parts of SoftStar on our website, klcc.org.
Whee!
It happens to everyone.
Yeah.
Well done, well done.
Well, that's the most fun way I've gotten to end an interview.
Yeah, not many places have that, especially indoors.
Thanks to Sarah, Mark, and the other elves at SoftStar Shoes for the hospitality. This has been Oregon Rainmakers from KLCC. I'm Zach Ziegler. Thanks for listening.